Welcome to Vlogger Presents, the show that goes behind the scenes and interviews people from the photography industry. We're now on episode 48, and today we have someone different again. It's been really cool to keep having photographers and models and people from different genres. And today we have someone in the documentary photography world. And not only that, he's a teacher as well. So it's a very good episode for anyone who's interested in education. We also discuss things like Hull and the Fisherman, tips for choosing a university, camera lusts, how to fund your MA through a Kickstarter, Kevin Carter's famous Pulitzer picture, and some interesting Google apps in the random questions. So without further ado, let's play the music and welcome in Tobias. Three, two, one. Welcome everybody to Vlogger Presents. I'm your host, Andrew Walmsley. And we are now on episode 48. Today we have a guest for you called Tobias Beachwild.
Hello.
Hi there. So, how are you doing?
I'm not doing too bad, thank you very much. I've just been processing some film from our last adventure out. Quite pleased with the results. Been scanning away. So that's been an enjoyable experience. Yeah.
So, let's tell everyone how we met. So as far as I'm concerned, I worked at a school for about a week, and I got talking to Tobias's wife, and she told me about she was into photography and her husband was. So we hooked up on probably Instagram, I think, wasn't it?
I was going to say, I think it was Instagram. We sort of started having a nosy.
Yeah. And then eventually we decided to get together, and the other week we had our first little meet-up, a nice walk around some docks in Hull, and we both shot film, and we turned it into an article.
And so it was enjoyable to go out and shoot film with someone else as opposed to, you know, groups of lots of digital photographers. It's nice to have a play, somebody who's working with a light meter and a medium format camera. Big difference.
Yeah, to be fair, it was brilliant because it was a challenge for me. Obviously, Tobias, you'll learn about in a minute, has a lot of experience with this. So we was going in abandoned buildings. I was trying not to meet her other than using my eyes. And it was really, really good because I haven't done abandoned on film before.
I didn't realise that. That's impressive, actually, than the results you've got.
Yeah. Light's light, isn't it, mate? It's just practice, isn't it?
Yeah. The more you do, the better you get.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So the one thing you need to know about Tobias, he's very much an educator. He teaches this stuff. So let's talk a little bit about the education side. Okay. What drew you into further education?
Well, what happened was, as I was finishing my degree in photography, I realised I'd spent 3 years learning about photography, and in those 3 years also spent a lot of time teaching other people. And the sort of passion for what I was doing, I was holding seminars and things, not officially, but just getting groups together doing crits and things. And I thought, this is what I want to do. I don't want to go to war zones. I don't want to get shot at. I decided that maybe the best way to be a photographer and still be able to afford to live was maybe teaching. And so I signed up at the last minute. And by last minute, I was sat in the job centre signing on when I got my email from UCAS telling me you've got to place at university again. So it really was the moment of truth. Got my teaching placement, and from there on was hooked to it. It's such a rewarding experience, especially when you can teach darkroom. You take kids who have been brought up, they're digital natives, they're addicted to instant photo success, and then you take them and you go, this is how you're going to make a photograph. Instead of just taking a picture and sticking a filter on it, this is going to make a photograph. And you can take any kid, no matter who they are, and when you take them through the process of shooting a frame of film or a couple of frames of film, processing it, taking it into the dark, first of all, getting it processed, they process it and there's a picture on a piece of plastic that moments before was blown, and their minds are blown by that. And then you take them in the darkroom, and there's that moment where in the red light your picture starts to appear. That, every time, is a brilliant experience as a teacher, because they've made something. That when they see that, and the kids I've taught have gone on to do brilliantly, and it's something that makes me very proud that they're still, a lot of them, using film, still a lot of them are exploring these things. So yeah, it's a hard job. Teaching isn't something that is a glorious, happy place all the time. But when you teach kids and they're enthusiastic about your subject, and you're enthusiastic the way that I am, you know, when you end up with a group of people who are interested in talking to you about what you're interested in. So it becomes an easy job. You can spend your life chatting about photography, and you've got 15, 20 kids all asking you questions, and what I don't know, I learn. I've learned probably more since teaching photography than I ever did being taught photography, because kids ask you the weirdest questions. What'll happen if I bury my... What happens if I bury this film for 6 weeks? I haven't a clue. Let's try it. You know, you know. So if I were to, like, shoot at 3 o'clock in the morning and use infrared film, what will happen? Let's Google it. Let's have a look. If it doesn't work, nothing lost. You know, let's have a go at this stuff. And so they have such creative ideas because they don't know any rules. They know the basics, but they don't have this sort of preconceived idea of what you should be doing with a camera or what you should be doing with film.
Yeah.
And so they really push the boundaries without even realizing they're doing it. So that it keeps you fresh. And I'm always looking at new work. I'm always learning more because the kids are constantly coming to show me stuff, going, have you seen this photographer? And if I haven't, then that's new to me. If someone I already know, I might be able to send them some more work. The biggest thing I'm pleased about with the way that photography's been taught, or the way that I teach with them and the way that they're teaching me as well, is that I really like to start with the basics. You go Henry Cartier-Bresson, you go Cindy Sherman, you give them these, you Martin Parrs. Mm-hmm. You know, you give them these names and they get started with that. But then they go off on a tangent and they'll find photographers that I've never heard of. Mm-hmm. And it's brilliant. There's just this two-way learning experience is brilliant. So yeah, I've ranted, apologise. It's just brilliant. It is a brilliant job. Paperwork, not so much, but actually teaching, that's brilliant.
I'm very jealous.
Yeah, don't worry, the paperwork really does counteract all the fun.
Yeah. So do you want to tell the listeners, because bear in mind that not everyone's from the UK, and in fact, quite a lot of listeners are from the US, what age group are we talking about?
Okay, so I mean, I specialise now in the 14 to 18 year old group. Photography is usually 16 to 18, but we do some digital and filmmaking in the lower end. Prior to that, I taught slightly younger kids as well.
So, I mean, this is a great, well, not a great age, but it's an important age in defining who you are and what you want to do, isn't it? So,
well, this is it, it's a time, especially, I'll say, in the UK, they're taking their GCSEs and their A-levels, which is, you know, they're building up to university. And so this is the time that they start to specialise. And the number of kids who've come to me going, I'm going to take photography because I just want a non-academic, which is an awful way of putting it because it is an academic subject, but it's a creative academic subject.
Yeah.
They say, oh, I want to take a subject that's not a core maths, English, science. And so you go, okay, what are you going to go to university? Oh, well, I'm going to go study maths. Right, that's great. And then 6 months in, they go, I'm not going to study maths, by the way. And you go, okay. I'm going to go study photography at university. And this is a genuine discussion that I had with the girls. Like, brilliant. Do your parents know? And they're like, yeah, I've told them. I'm like, am I expecting a phone call? And, you know, should I be, like, slightly concerned that they're annoyed you're not going to go study maths? Mm. And But no, they were fully supportive, and these kids, she's now finishing. In fact, she has just finished university this third year, and she's just graduated with first class honours. So,
wow.
You know, that's brilliant stuff. Kids like that. I mean, I'm starting to suddenly feel like a proper grown-up because I'm bumping into students. I think of myself as only just out of university, which is delusional. But,
yeah.
You know, that's how I like to think of life. I bump into kids who are like, oh, you used to be my photography teacher. I'm thinking, yeah, I did. Oh, that was 5 years ago. I've just finished uni. I've done this and I've done that. And I'm thinking, oh, no, I'm an adult. When did that happen? You know?
Yeah.
Did I stop being just out of university?
It's funny you say that. It popped up on my Facebook feed from 8 years ago, my degree result. And you're like, oh, God, it feels like yesterday.
Blink of an eye. 9 years ago, I finished my teacher training. So 10 years ago, I finished my degree. Real adult stuff now. That's why teaching's great, though. I don't have to grow up. I spend all day playing with cameras, and it's always something new.
Yeah, well, I'm going to stop talking to you. It's just not fair.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. it certainly isn't half a bad job, to be fair.
Yeah, no, that's cool. It's nice to see passion in people teaching because, you know, there's been ups and downs in education, haven't there?
Yeah, I'd tell you what, you don't do it if you haven't got passion for it because you don't last. You got to love the subject you're teaching because the emotional issues that you deal with, the ups and downs of the kids themselves. Mm-hmm. When you see some of them, they've gone through more in like 14 years than you've gone through in 30 odd.
Yeah.
You've got to find a way of making that into something positive for them. So there is that. It's a tough job, but it's a good job.
Oh, that's cool. So you said what sort of got you into teaching, but did you always want to do photography coming out of school and going into college and university then?
Well, funnily enough, I was home educated until year 9, so that's when you turn 14. And
okay.
I went into school and I had an amazing science teacher and I was going to be a scientist. That was it. But I also had an amazing form tutor who was an art teacher, and I seen them doing A-level photography, and I was like, I want to do some photography. And this guy, Mr. Swales, his name was, stayed late once a week and taught me darkroom. And by the end of that first year, science, I was like, oh, yeah, I was going to be a scientist, enjoyed that. Started my GCSEs, took art, because I had to take art to do the photography, and obviously had to take the sciences. By the end of that first year of GCSE, I was 100% photography. That's what I want to do. That's who I'm going to be. Stuff a career in the sciences, that's not for me. And this guy was brilliant. I've still got the very first photo I took, and it was of him. And he must have been younger than I am now. And I always think of him as probably about 20-something. But he was this brilliant, inspirational guy who just said yes when a kid asked him, can you teach me something? And that was, especially some of what he did is probably why I teach, because he just said, when I came to swimming with us, I've got a camera, and believe me, it was awful. My first camera was a plastic Fantastic that my grandma had got from, I think it was Littlewood's catalogue, with cigarette coupons. It was awful. You know, I mean, she smoked like 100 a day, and these coupons were collected, and we bought this awful plastic camera. But he taught me this process of film. And then when I started my A-level, my dad took me out and we bought a Canon A1, which I still shoot with. Shot most of my degree on that. Brilliant little camera. Okay. Very trendy now. Wasn't when I... Everyone else, it was the early noughties, and everyone else who was shooting film was using fancy EOS with autofocus and all this, that, and the other. And my dad goes, no, you don't want that. You don't want that plastic rubbish. You want one of these. This is what I had. And I say, got the Canon A1. Still going, bomb-proof piece of kit.
Metal cameras.
Yeah. Old metal bodies, or partially metal bodies. Yeah. No electronics, or very little electronics. That's the way forward.
Mm.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. So your next step now is something, obviously, you're still doing is your MA in photography.
Yeah, so I'm now halfway through my MA, over 2 years doing it part-time with Falmouth University. Yeah, I'm working on a fairly massive project, which is exploring Hull's lost trawler industry and the people who are left, which are rapidly declining, number of people in the sort of twilight years, maybe is the best way to put it. And it's kind of becoming a all-consuming passion. I've taken over reading photography books, have come to a second place now to history books about Hull. It's an area that I knew very little about before I started this project and has become a passion, really. Somewhere that, obviously, I'm from Hull, my home city, and I'd always thought the fishing industry had been something that had died out in the Victorian times. In fact, it was, you know, the 70s, so not all that long ago, and it just shut down and everyone was gone. And it's left some interesting things, like the buildings we went and looked at, the abandoned streets, the old docks. There's some amazing leftovers. But what's sad is this community that was ripped apart, which is what I'm trying to document before time finishes it all off. But there's still a keen community that come back to where they were all from. And that's kind of what I'm exploring. The MA itself is a real challenge, but something that I've been looking forward to. Depends on the type of person you are, but for me, photography, I need a purpose to make my photos. If I don't have a deadline, I've got projects that I started 5 years ago that are still ongoing because no one is demanding a finish date for them. Forcing myself to do the MA has really resulted in me keeping the pressure on making myself produce work. Something that I haven't felt since I did my BA at Newport, which, you know, that instilled some good work ethic in me. But when you've got a day job, a family, you know, you put those things on hold. So you need something like the MA going, get this done. You've got 2 weeks, you need 20 photos, go out and shoot. It helps having a range of different tutors who are all contemporary photographers all out there working.
Yeah. So one of the things we discussed was university choice, why this is a good uni. So do you want to elaborate why people should think carefully about choosing their unis?
Yeah. Okay, so the choice of university, especially for photography, is vital because it's about networking. You learn some amazing skills. I went to Newport and studied their documentary photography course, which some of the listeners probably will have heard of. It's turned out some big names in photography. It's also one of the toughest, well, it was the toughest 3 years of education I've ever gone through. And I know a lot of people didn't make it. We started with 80 kids in my year, and I say kids, I think I was the youngest at 19, and we ended up with 20 graduating that year. So three years, dropout rate pretty high because it's tough, but it makes good photographers. The reason it's worth doing a degree like that is you really prove to yourself that this is what you want to do. You also have the lecturers who are connected. So names that people will know are names like Martin Parr. Now, he was one of the professors on our course. Paul Rees was a professor on our course. Clive Landon, Pete Davies, Ken Grant. These are all guys, you know, while I was there, they had shown the tape. They're amazing photographers who, it was like you'd walk around the corner and you'd bump into your heroes, you know, quite literally. Yeah, I mean, my wife forever tells a story where she walked around the corner and accidentally headbutted Martin Parr in the chest, you know, that purely because she wasn't looking where she was going, he wasn't looking where he was going. She just came around the corner and bumped into him and head straight into Martin Parr's chest because he's about, 6 foot something and she's 5 foot nothing. She always remembers that. You know. This is the opportunities that universities provide you. There are good universities, there are bad universities. I wouldn't say any university bad. You know, you as long as you get photographic education, you've got inspiring tutors, then so be it. But if you can find a course like the Newport course where they really push you, being pushed by professionals makes you a better photographer. It's hard, and there'll be you'll have memories of all sorts of things. I mean, I remember our first proper crip, where our tutor took all of our work and he pinned it all up on the wall, and he went along it and tore half of it down, telling us that we were not photographers yet, and that no matter what we thought we were rubbish, and we needed to all go away and shoot more and practice and get better. Now,
it's pretty scary.
It's terrifying, because there's this guy, and he's not that big. He's been lovely, building you up this first few weeks. You know, he's held you by the hand, and then you put your work out there thinking he's going to be lovely, and he does not do lovely. He does real, but you need that.
Yeah.
Sorry, because you don't get secondary education and colleges, tutors, myself included. You are building these kids up because you've got to get them confident with the kit they're using, get them confident in the work they're producing. Mm-hmm. But they do need someone to come along and go, this is the reality. And if you want to sell work, or you want to be a success photographically, you have to be critical, really critical.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you like your work, it's not good enough. Go away. If you're liking it, this you're not looking at it hard enough.
Mm.
That's a tough lesson to learn, but it's an important one.
It is. Yeah.
And then I've gone, for the MA, I've gone Falmouth. Now, Falmouth is another one of the sort of top photography universities. But the approach with this being the MA is slightly different. It's more, you are on the level with your tutors. You're not a tutor student. You're...
Okay.
You're two people talking photography. They're guiding you. They have the industry knowledge. But it's not... That groundwork's being done by your degree. The MA is far more, you're justifying what doing, you're explaining it, and they're going, that's a great idea. Why haven't you tried? Or why don't you have a go at it? It's a totally different experience. No less pressure, but it's you've got a wider base as well with who you're working with. So I have tutors who live in Turkey, Japan, London, all over the world. I've got a New York based tutor. And so it's all done on, at the moment, it's done online. And so I'll have a web conference with someone in Japan talking about what I've been doing in Hull. And they've got a completely different view on it. And they've also got the network out there. So you can then go, this is the project. This is what I want to do with it. I want to sell it. I want to do this with it. I want to do that with it. And they'll go, it'll sell really well in Turkey. It'll be brilliant. So these are the people you need to contact.
That's what you mean. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
in a totally different way than, you know, the BA was teaching you how to deal with making work and also how to work in industry, but the MA is more about building on those networks and creating work and understanding why you create work. It's sort of taking it apart and looking at the symbolism and the science within your own photos.
Yeah,
it's very academic.
I think the other thing here is you don't have these same experience in real life. So let's say you're just 18, you don't do university, you go into a job, you learn your photography yourself, you will not easily come across this network of people.
Oh, no. It's a closed world, which is kind of sad, but it is something you have to break into. University gives you a way in. I mean, and then you talk to like people you meet at university. So I've got friends who are working photographers elsewhere in the country, and they have networks, and they do. There's some of my friends just finished his MA at LCC, and he introduced me to someone who lives down the road and is one of the lecturers at Lincoln University. And it's this sort of network building that you don't, it's almost an old boys club, except not old boys, because it's broadening up. It used to be a very male dominated industry, but it's getting better. But yeah, it's about, and it does open doors, which is right or wrong the way it is. You know, sometimes work is overlooked because it's not from someone knows. So there is that kind of, it's an unfortunate situation, but it's the way all industries work, and you have to kind of accept and go with it. University helps with that. It helps you get a realistic understanding of what's got to be done. Which, and who to talk to and how to get your work seen. Because you can make the best work in the world, and there are photographers out there who I have come across who make amazing work, but far better than some of the stuff I've seen in galleries or in books or competition winners, but it's under the bed, you know, or it's on a computer and it's never been printed. And it's that kind of, turning it into something to be seen by other people.
Yeah, and I think, like you say, there's always going to be talent, irrelevant of education. Some people are natural at everything. But I know from some of the previous people I've interviewed, we've had a couple of students on, that university is still viable. Still a reason for doing it. And it's very different from the real world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would always recommend, if you're going to go into photography, that there is the apprenticeship, there is the working it up, sleeping on people's sofas, doing the no money, eating pot noodles, I'm going to London to find my fortune route. And some people I know have done that. But it's taken 15 years of sleeping on sofas. Versus 3 years at university and some networking. It is. It's worth it if you're going to use it.
Yeah, and I think that's the killer words there. We're trying to do is not advise younger members of the audience, but there's people like Barney. So Barney will be thinking about university. Is it next year? I'm trying to remember now. So he's got real choices to make. He's going to have a year out. He said. And then he's going to go to uni. So he's got ideas where he maybe wants to go because he's got an idea of the design side. So I think backing up what you're saying, you know, it could give you experience, networking. It teaches you a lot about yourself.
And if nothing else, it's 3 years growing up. You grow up a lot there.
So... I'm sure Barney will check this out. What would your advice be to Barney, say, choosing a uni?
Do your research. Do your research not on just the course, but on the tutors, because it's them that you're working with. That is the important thing. It is no good going to a university for a tutor that you don't respect. You've got to respect the work they make, because no matter how hard... they try not to, their work will influence you. Okay, so if it's something that you don't want to do, and it's not a style you want to work in, and you don't think you're going to agree with them, that is 3 years of fighting. That's 3 years of battling with someone, trying to get your voice heard over theirs. If it's someone who, if there's usually three or four tutors, if you can say two out of four or three out of four are the kind of people that you want to work with, that's the uni for you. You'll know. Go on visits. Look at the resources. One of the selling points when I went for Newport was their dark rooms. I went there, and the entire basement of this building was a dark room. You know, and I'd been to other universities where they'd had a cupboard, and it didn't do it for me. But you know when you're there. You will know when you get there. But tutors, do your research on the tutors. Look at the reading list. If you can get hold of the reading list, if it doesn't have things like Susan Sontag and John Berger on there. First of all, you're a lucky person because those books are hard work, but they are vital. You need to read that kind of stuff to better your own photography. Don't go to university thinking it's going to be teaching you technical skills. There are workshops, that's fine, but what they're teaching you is how to look at photographs, how to decode them, how to understand them, how to make better photographs that tell a story. If you want to do technical stuff, that's where you do your A-levels. That's what you learn there, or your BTEC, or your sitting guilds. That's where you learn your technical skills. University, you learn to think about photography and make it. But it's not going to be 3 years of people teaching you magical tricks on how to make your photos look better. A side note, Pete Davis, when we first, my first year, I was dead proud. So the trusty Canon 81 was there, but I'd also had a Saturday job and I bought myself a Minolta in, looking back, awful soon. But anyway, and I bought myself a Minolta film camera, and it was autofocus, auto this, auto that, auto the other. And I thought, I'm going to go up and ask him if this is a good enough camera. I know this is a good enough camera. But anyway, so I asked him, and he goes, I'm not interested in what camera you use. I don't care. The only thing that matters is that you're going to go out and take pictures. And that was a real kind of like, oh, yeah. You don't care what you shoot on. No, they don't. They say, this is how much film you need to go out and shoot. And you can shoot it on a £2, you know, plastic Fantastic, but you need to be out and shoot. And that was a realisation. Yeah. So, yeah, that's my advice.
No, thanks. I think you nailed university in general as well. So my experience is the same. Mine was a computing degree, but I learned to think more than anything. I didn't learn any very many technical skills, a little bit. But by God, I did learn how to think. And if you do learn, you get good grades.
Yeah. I'd say the best thing I learned in university was I knew nothing.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I got there and I thought I was the king of photography. Yeah. And very quickly I realised I knew absolutely nothing. And that was what made the difference between me and some of the others who dropped out, was I went, actually, I know nothing, I need to learn. And some of the others were like, I know what I'm doing, why do I have to listen?
Yeah, and that's what education is, you know, in general, isn't it?
If you're an A star at A level, it means nothing when you get to university. It just means you've been good enough to get there. that's it. You're back to square one, and if they say you're going to do this, you're going to do it, because that's the way to learn.
Yeah, definitely. No, like, that's cool. So, Barney, hope you listen to that, mate. So how long have you been in photography then? Because obviously you said you did it at GCSD, so that's 16.
Yeah, I mean, I started taking pictures with that plastic Fantastic camera when I was 10. Processed my first film prop, like not just sending it away, but actually processed it myself when I was 14. And ever since, really been seriously into it since 14. But yeah, always taking pictures, loved it. It was, I think looking back, it's a way of recording, for me, it was a way of recording what was going on around me. Just as a severely dyslexic individual, writing things down was never going to be my way of recording things. And despite being an art teacher for a long time, painting and drawing are still not my favourite way of expressing myself. But the camera, that was the way forward. And so, yeah, image making for a very, very long time. Moved to digital, but still think film's the way forward for me, because it makes you think.
Yeah. Yeah, so one thing we was both saying was, so like even when we went on this walk together, Tobias brought half his house with him just in case.
Yeah. So overpack.
He's an overpacker, just in case person. I take one thing with me. Oh, damn. I've left whatever at home.
Oh, yeah. That's my biggest curse.
But at the end of the day, you had digital with you as well. So, like we've said, it was a useful tool for me to be able to write an article within one day and get some out there, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with carrying plenty of gear. But I've developed, over the years, I've got worse and worse. Used to take two cameras, two lenses, plenty of film. But I've become so paranoid of missing a shot now. So we went out, I took two 35mm, one medium format and one digital, which was somewhat overkill.
Which is a lot of gear, isn't it?
It's a lot of gear to carry. There's a reason why photographers have got bad backs as a whole. But yeah, I'm challenging myself now to shoot, going to shoot with just one or possibly two cameras. just to try and restrict the damage to my spine.
But I think this is like the focusing thing. So you have to have a focus to shoot. That's what you've said. So for me, it's the same thing with cameras. So I'll take one camera and that is my focus. So some of this recent work has been 150mm focal length to shoot architecture, which is stupid. It's not something you would normally do, but it means A, I've got a purpose, B, I've got one lens, one camera, and I use one film.
Yeah. I mean, the best work that I produced prior to my MA was shot on one camera, one lens in Scotland with no opportunity to change any gear. And that's because you think creatively. If the lens isn't the right focal length, there is no right focal length. You know, you get this, like, portraits should be done on 85 or a 135 and a 50mm push, and landscape should be on a 28 or wider. And you hear all these rules, and most of them are rubbish. You know, these rules are a guideline at best.
Yeah.
And it's breaking those rules that makes you find interesting photographs. Because if you take 20 photographers and you give them a 28mm lens, you stick them in a beautiful landscape, they'll take the exact same photo. You give one of those photographers an 85mm lens and he'll do something different. So break that rule and have a go. You'll do something different. It makes something more interesting. Believe me, I've seen more pictures of the Humber Bridge than I ever want to see again, because it's what every photography student in the area looks at, because it's big, but they always take it on a wide lens. Best photo I ever saw of it was taken on an 85, stood underneath it, couldn't tell it was the bridge. Brilliant. Break the norms. Like yourself, use a different kind of focal length, gets me out of it.
Yeah. It's good to have a dual purpose in that sense.
And just challenge yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So what's been the most important camera you choose? Not your favourite, but what the most important?
I tell you what, the most important camera I chose was to slow down and shoot medium format. Or even shoot large format. Large format's prohibitively expensive, despite having the camera. It's something that only comes out once in a while. But shooting medium format makes me work better. It slows me down. I consider the images I'm making. And also, you know, I consider the expense of each shot. When you're paying for every frame, as opposed to taking 200 photographs digitally, you actually consider what's going on. You take a slow and considered approach and you make better photographs because you're looking at everything in that frame before you press the shutter. You're not shooting machine gun style and then looking at the screen. You know, I mean, we're all guilty of that.
Yeah, of course.
You know, we all will. If you've got a digital camera, you shoot way more than you need. You then go back and you edit in a computer. If you're shooting and if you're using square format, you've got, you know, 12 shots. If you're using 6.7, you've got 10, or 16 if you're 6.45. You know, when that's all you've got, you really conserve your shots and you think about what you're making images of. So, yeah, that's the most, to me, going film and going medium format was the wisest choice for projects.
I agree. I love it. I think it's...
Yeah.
Such an interesting format. The cameras are just spectacular to look at. They're nice and loud. I love that clunkiness.
Exactly. There's definitely a way forward with using them.
Yeah. So a different version of the question. What do you lust after?
Ooh.
Is there one?
Camera. I'll tell you what I lust after. The Mamiya 7 Mark II, which I had, that was what I shot that Scottish stuff on, loved it. And then I had it sat under the bed and it was sat there collecting dust. And I looked at it one day and felt complete guilt this camera wasn't being used. And so sold it. And then a year and a half later started my MA and wish I'd never sold it because it was the most versatile piece of kit. So it's a medium format rangefinder. So it's like a massive rangefinder, but it's compared to other medium format cameras, it weighs nothing. The image quality is stellar, has a built-in light meter. It was just, for me, it was the perfect camera. But when I wasn't using it, it was an awful lot of money sat doing nothing.
Yeah.
It had to go. I've never been a big fan of Hasselblads. I've played with them, but they don't do it for me. So I know a lot of people would say, oh, I dream of having a Hasselblad, but no, for me, it's Japanese cameras. They generally tend to be lighter and a bit easier to get your head around. Innovative, that's the other thing. But yeah, there you go. That's my dream camera.
So you just got to save up your £2,000 to buy the next one.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I've blown my camera budget of late buying an M6 Leica, so that's going to be used a lot to make its cost worth it. Yeah, that comes out every time I go out, just so that I can say I've used it.
So, where do you think you see yourself in, say, 5 years or 10 years?
Do you know what? I'd love to see myself continuing doing what I'm doing, teaching. Mm-hmm. But I also want a book with the whole stuff in it out there in the next five years. I'd love to have had some work displayed in galleries again. I've not done that for 10 years now. So yeah, I see myself still teaching, still encouraging the next generation of photographers to get out there and make work, but also be onto my, I say, book for the whole project, maybe a second book. I want the work to be out there and be seen, raising awareness of different social stories. So yeah, telling stories is where I want to be in 10 years' time. But with
that sounds amazing, mate. Yeah. Well, I think your whole thing's obviously going to bring that out in your.
Yeah.
And hopefully you'll influence me to do something as well, actually.
Well, that's it. And so to keep me going, I think the next thing is after the MA is the PhD. So that's the other plan for the next 5 years.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Mostly so I can insist on being called Doctor. I mean, massive Doctor fan. So if I can make other people call me the Doctor, then so be it. Lifelong dream complete.
Fair enough. I'll just change my name. It's cheaper.
Yeah, tell me about it. So maybe someone will hear this and sponsor me.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Who wants to sponsor a PhD in photography?
Email
Flogger, please.
Yeah, I'll keep an eye out for them millions of emails, and obviously it'll take the time to read them all.
This is it. You know, we want plenty of quality feedback on this.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So what's the main motivation to keep you going?
Again, it's the storytelling. I mean, I trained as a documentary photographer, and I want to get people's stories told in a visual way. I think reading a book is one thing. Don't get me wrong. I do love a good book, but pictures tell stories in a much more direct way. You can see, I mean, if you think of the famous photo by Kevin Carter, there we go. Kevin Carter's photo of the vulture and child. And there's a little girl and she's curled up on the floor. I think most people have seen it. Anyone who's around in the 90s probably seen it in the press. It won the Pulitzer Prize. Now, that image tells a really powerful story.
Yeah, it does,
You see it, and that image is instant. You know what's going on there. Mm-hmm. Now, I think photography has a unique ability over video or written words to tell a story in a frozen moment. It does allow for interpretation. You know, you can see a photograph and people can read them differently, but it gets people thinking about things far more than a video. You see a news article with something like Kevin Carter's image on it, and you've forgotten it the next day. You know, we see so many harrowing videos. You see a photo like that, it becomes part of your cultural memory. The same with things like Nick Ut's photo of the napalm girl in Vietnam. you know, those photos have power. Now, I'm not saying that what I'm producing is anything like that, but what I'm trying to do is create a visual record and a history that when in 50 years' time, somebody looks at the book that I made about Hull's fishing industry and goes, wow, I didn't even know Hull had a fishing industry. Because in 50 years' time, there won't be anything there. It will have all fallen down.
Yeah, exactly.
And there'll be no one to ask. So, yeah, it's almost an element of time travel, this photography, because you can look at a picture and be back somewhere that you weren't ever able to visit.
Yeah, and I think, like, so we actually went to this abandoned street as well in Hull, didn't we? And it's really strange that when we talk of abandoned street, it's an estate, and in the middle of the estate, they've just literally demolished and, like, houses have just disappeared.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, a lump of 10 in one street, and then there's, like, 10 in a corner. And, yes, you know, everyone still lived on the estate.
Yeah, just around it. That's the unfortunate thing that happens when you remove an industry from a community, and it's news for a week and then it's gone. But the problem is it isn't gone. It's not fixed. It's not dealt with. It's just something else has happened. And like I say, there's people living on those photographs that people probably see or will have seen on the article that you put together and the photographs that we've done. There's people living there actually on the row of abandoned houses. There's 8 families live down that street alongside houses that are burnt out and they can't move because they've got no way of getting out.
Yeah, but I mean,
these stories need telling.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why I think the documentary work, you know, when I first saw some of your photos, you're like, oh, well, it's just a picture of a guy in a pub. But then, you know, you read your comment and you look at your next one, you're like, no, this is a huge project. It's not a picture.
No.
It's a story, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, the project, say, it's a year old now, and I reckon, now, for the MA, I'll need to have a conclusion of it. So it'll be a 2-year project. But in reality, it's going to be a 5-year project. There'll be a 2-year project show and a magazine or a catalogue, and then another 3 years working on it to actually finish it.
Yeah, but because that's nice. You've got a reason for doing it. It's, you know, it's an important thing.
And it's a community that needs recording.
Yeah. And it's not just like what you said. So the Humber Bridge, it makes a nice picture, but there's no story there. It's still something in use. Everyone could go at any time and do it.
I think what I specialise, or what I like to specialise in, is communities that are on the edge, whether it's literally on the edge of disappearing or just on the edge of our society. So I went up, I say that the stuff I did in Scotland was Lewis and Harris, and it's this tiny little village that's on the edge of, you know, there's not much further away from the centre of Britain than being up there. And it's still classed as the UK, but it's a totally different world. You bump into people up there. I mean, I bumped into an old lady on a croft who was amazed by my laptop. You know, she'd seen computers, but she hadn't seen a few years ago, like, you know. But she didn't have telly, she had radio, but she was like, the fact I whipped the laptop up, took my SD card into the computer and it was a compact flash, actually, but, you know, plugged it into the computer and was showing images I'd just taken. She was astounded, because these people with, you know, some of those cottages up there on the crofts have got like Cali gas, a well, and electricity sometimes, you know.
But
I love this kind of recording communities while they exist, because I think the great thing about technology is the world's getting smaller, but the worst thing about that is everyone's becoming very similar. Everything becomes very homogenized, and you lose cultural identity and you lose individuality by kind of everyone watching the same TV programs, everyone dressing in a certain way, following the same fashions, the same trends, and individual communities lose out to that. So yeah, that's kind of why I do it.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, we wish you every success, and
thank you very
much. It'd be lovely to, you know, we'll showcase the work as and when. I know it's going to be a long time, but it doesn't matter.
Thank you.
No problem. Yeah, I'm going to look forward to that. So we're at the point of the show where we go into my random questions.
Okay.
I need to get a jingle for this, without a doubt. So if you've got any students willing to do it, let me know.
I was going to say, I've got a few musical students that I might be able to get them to put something together. I'll ask them if anyone wants to work on a podcast.
Yeah, do it as a project, and they say, you know, I'll tell their name on every podcast, so.
There we go. I'll put it out there. Okay. I'll see them tomorrow and see what they have to say.
So, your first question, it's your last day on Earth. What song do you play?
Oh, wow. Teenage Dirtbag by Wheatus.
Good choice.
Yeah, saw them live when I was...
Is there a reason now, just because it's...
Nah, it's a brilliant song, but I saw them live when I was a teenager. And it was brilliant. Loved it.
Okay.
So yeah, definitely Teenage Dirtbag. Cool. There you go.
Right, nice one. You're looking down on the Earth from your space flight. What part of the world would you like to photograph?
Wow, that's an interesting one. I'm going to go with, that's difficult, Russia. Yeah, I want to see Russia, but I'm not sure I want to go to Russia. So that'd be the best way of doing it, I think. It's one of those places that looks amazing, but slightly scary.
Might cost you a bit of money, though, just to go in space to get a photo.
Yeah, well, there is that. You know, there's obviously the logistics of these things.
Yeah. It's going to happen, though.
Yeah, well, it's SpaceX and Elon Musk. We'll all be going on holiday in space soon.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be on the show soon. I mean, so...
Yeah, well, there we go. Well, say these sponsors who want to pay for my PhD, maybe they'll pony up the money for a space flight as well.
Definitely. Yeah, we'll put that in the terms.
Yeah.
Does God have a lion at the weekend?
Definitely. Everyone has a lion at the weekend. Even hardworking teachers have a lion at the weekend. Even I don't get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to do marking, so yeah, I'm reckoning God takes a lion at the weekend.
I reckon
he rested for one day, didn't he? So there we go. Definitely has a Sunday lion.
Yeah, he has a Sunday lion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I'll give him that.
You're going to like this one because I know you're into your films.
Go on.
Google has logged enough data to know your every move. And they invented a new app. It calculates the length of your current relationship. Would you enable it?
Ooh. Yeah, you know, I would. Me and my wife have been together 13 years. We met as teenagers, and she's tolerated me this long, so I think I'm fairly safe now. If my students who know me have even said to me that they don't know how she puts up with me, and she still does. So if teenagers realise how much hard work I am, and she's still around, I think we're good. I reckon it'd say forever, I reckon. That's all soppy and romantic. Okay.
No, that's good. Yeah. I would probably say something similar till the wife found one better.
Well, this is it. If she ever chooses to upgrade, I've had it. But exactly, hopefully she'll tolerate me for the rest of the days.
Well, I'm already up on the bench for sale, mate, so I'll have to be careful. here's another science fiction one for you. You've been ignored by society. Everyone passes you every day and says nothing. You find some glasses on the floor and put them on. and you discover the world for what it is, full of messages from God, and there are aliens everywhere. You try to persuade your friend to put on the glasses, but they refuse. Do you keep the glasses on, or are you happy to live in a lie and be happy?
Oh, I wanna wear the glasses because I'm always digging at things and always trying to find.
Yeah, you're a documentary photographer. Yeah, you want the truth, don't you?
Yeah, that. Yeah, I kind of can't leave things alone. So yeah, no, I'd have to keep going with them.
Your next one. If you got locked in a building, say overnight, mm-hmm. which one would you choose it to be? Say, pub, department store, clothes shop, library.
Do you want library? Good call, actually. Library, because I bet there'd be something interesting to read. And if there wasn't, you could always, you know, burn a few books to keep warm. But no, reading. I think it'd be interesting because there's something to do with, you know, libraries have got loads going on. Pub, tempting, but, you know, you'd end up paying for it when you woke up in the morning, you know.
Yeah.
But there'd be a hangover and probably a large bar tab. So, yeah, library. I could do least damage in a library, I think.
I like that, yeah. I think it just shows how sad we all are.
Oh, God, yeah. No.
Yeah, like you say, we're nerds.
Yeah, I'm a happy nerd. I don't want to be anything.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot for going through that. That was good fun.
It's all right. That's brilliant.
Some good answers there. So what I always say to my guests is, do you want to tell everyone where people can find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram under Tobias Beach Wild, and you can find me under Tobias Beach Wild at, hang on, my brain has gone somewhat docile this evening, portfoliobox.co.uk as well. But with a name like Tobias Beach Wild, literally Google it, and everything that comes up, that's me. So, yeah, but have a look at Instagram. That's my most regularly updated form of communication. And feel free to drop me a message. Any questions, ask away. Any advice? Cool. If anyone has anything to say, I'm always willing to learn. So if you think, oh, my Lord, why are you taking pictures like that? Ask me and maybe tell me something that I might not know.
Cool. Yeah, and obviously, anyone's listening, you get to see the work unfold as it does it. So you'll see, even in a recent photo, Tobias has even used the water from the doctor to develop it. And I think that's, you know, a lovely little sentimental thing.
Yeah, I tell you what, though, fishing that water out's not fun.
That's a
combination of slightly terrified of falling in and not so keen on touching anything after you've got your hands in that water.
Yeah.
It's, rubber glove job.
It's not the Mediterranean for anyone listening, or like the Pacific. It's nothing like that. Trust us. It's commercial waters.
that's a good way of putting it. And I did a little bit of research. Turns out it's got more painkillers and antidepressants in it than any other river in the UK.
Oh, you're selling it to me. You're really selling it.
Yeah, well, if I start to grow like serious hair on the backs of my hands from touching the water, we'll know.
So you might
have some interesting stuff.
Yeah, well, that's going to cause some strange effects on your necks, isn't it?
Yeah, and the silt and things have scratched sort of interesting patterns into it. So it's been worth experimenting with. We'll try it with some E6 film next, see if that messes the chemistry up, because they're so much more delicate than black and white. So we'll see how that goes. But there we are.
That's cool. So I think as we come to an end, is there anything you would like to say to anyone?
Just keep listening to the podcast and make sure you give it a review on iTunes. The more people who review it, the more people get to hear this, and we'll have to go and look at my work. So get yourselves on there and review it, please.
Yeah,
thank you very much for that.
No, thanks a lot for your time, Tobias. It's been a pleasure to have you on here, and I wish you all success with the project, and obviously we'll carry on meeting up, mate.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Cheers.
Yeah. I hope you feel better soon, mate.
I will do. Cheers. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, mate. Cheers.
Cheers.
Well, folks,
That's the end of another show. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I enjoyed making it. It's always great to have a guest on with me. Please do share the post and podcast show as much as you can where relevant. If you have time, please do not forget to review this on iTunes. Just hit the review button and give it 5 stars, please. It's always helpful. It's motivation for me to keep the show going, and I want to keep this going for as long as possible. And basically, I'd like to get lots of different and interesting people on here. So that's what I'm trying to do. Thank you again, and see you next time. Bye.